Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program Jasper Ford. His new book is The Woman Who Died a Lot. This is number 7 in his Thursday Next series. Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Do you remember being here before?
Yeah, yes, vaguely. Did we speak face-to-face?
We did.
We did, didn't we?
We did. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Probably at 12 years.
So it was for the Air Affair, was it?
I believe it was.
Ah.
And I remember you gave me a postcard.
I'm still giving them out.
Yes, you gave me a postcard, and you actually came to Dayton, Ohio on book tour. That's how it happened. You came out to the radio station in Yellow Springs.
Yeah, that was it.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So how have you been?
I'm good. I'm still here. I'm still writing. Thanks to the grace of from some very generous readers and publishers, I'm still here.
Well, I got to say, I laughed again and again and again reading your new book. I always do. And The Woman Who Died a Lot brings us into this wonderful world where librarians are powerful.
Mm. Yeah. And armed and dangerous.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they're talking about whether to allow dawn raids to retrieve overdue books.
Uh-huh.
And that's the world in which we live, and the SLS, the Special Library Service, are all armed, and they have camouflage jackets which are of book spines, so they can blend into libraries.
And if you make too much noise in the library, what can they do to you?
Yeah, well, I think they could sort of take you out and, you know, have some serious words, you know, fine. Criminal offense, I think.
But don't they shoot people that make too much noise?
No, I think they shoot you if you try and steal books.
Oh!
I don't think they shoot you for making noise. No, but I think they would. They can. And librarians are allowed to shoot people as long as it's in the library. Right. If it's
there
outside the library, then it's murder.
Okay.
But if it's inside the library, then it's not. It's just a couple of forms to be filled in.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
This is book 7 in this delightful series, and I'm sure we have probably 2 or 3 people out there who are not familiar with your protagonist. Could you introduce her?
Yeah, sure. Right, Thursday Next is essentially a police officer who works in the book world. Now, what we imagine with the book world is that all the characters that you read about in plays and books and everything are actually real. And when they're not actually working, acting in their book, they sort of have time off and they can mill around the book world and get other jobs and stuff like that. But because I think that everything created by mankind has error and mischief hardwired at inception, that there are all sorts of, you know, sort of evildoers in the book world who are either trying to change plots or steal things or minor parts who are trying to, you know, gain a bigger part in a book. And Thursday Next looks after all these aspects of the book world. But at the same time, she has a family. You know, she gets married, she has a family, she has teenage children who do teenage children-y things in the world in which she lives, which is kind of like ours, but a bit more absurd, really, if such a thing is possible. And in this book, in the 7th in the series, we've been following her, you know, story throughout the series. And in this one, she's back in her hometown of Swindon, which is in the middle of the UK. And she had an accident in the previous book. She's feeling a bit sort of, I think, a little bit sorry for herself. She had a broken leg and she's in a bit of pain. And she's really dealing with kind of life outside of the book world. So in many ways, it's a kind of, you know, rest and recuperation for her, but there's still plenty of fun things to do.
And then she has an opportunity to become the chief librarian at the Swindon All-You-Can-Eat at Fatso's Drink Not Included Library.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always think that today there's so many places, aren't there, that take a bit of money and then they have to put the name of something. I mean, I've noticed it over here, and certainly with us as well in the UK. Is that football stadiums are often, you know, named after some company. And I thought, well, why don't we take this to its logical conclusion and actually have a company say, well, I don't want my company name, I want a company slogan. So the Wessex All You Can Eat at Fatso's Drink Not Included library is obviously, you know, the the way in which I think this might go.
And Thursday's daughter, Tuesday, is a genius, and she's working on a very important project.
Yeah. What this is that one of the ongoing threads throughout the series has been the government in Thursday's world is a very, very wise. They do everything right. It's clearly a very fictional world, but they're so perfect, they do everything right, that in fact what's happened is that stupidity surplus has built up. Because I think the functions of a government is to sort of take away the sort of innate stupidity in which the human race is imbued, and then just sort of slowly get rid of it in safe ways. Now, if you don't do that, the stupidity surplus builds up, and you have to discharge it in some sort of way. Anyway, the way in which they're doing this is to build a huge, hugely expensive anti-smote, a strategic anti-smote defense shield against the possibility of the Almighty's wrath against his creations. And she's working on that. But it's a vastly expensive, and no one knows whether it can work or not.
And they know that they will be smote. There has been smiting.
Yeah, they have. It's very strange for some reason. We haven't sort of established which god, but a god seems to have started taking upon himself to start smiting towns in a sort of pillar of all-cleansing fire. So now the strategic anti-smote defense shield is actually quite necessary. And the town of Swindon, in which Thursday lives, is going to be smitten on Friday at sort of about midday, and somehow Tuesday has to get the shield up and running, and it's quite tricky.
Jasper Ford joins us. His new book is The Woman Who Died a Lot. And this smiting, it's happening because people believe in God.
Well, yeah. We're not wholly sure what's going on, really. Everyone is kind of slightly confused about it. But we're not 100% whether it's one of those mysterious things. But all they know is that it's very real, and it's gonna happen, and they have to do something about it. And if the smite shield doesn't work, then they have to find a righteous man. Because, of course, if a righteous man is underneath the smiting can't happen. It's one of those rules.
Yes. And we need to mention Goliath, because Goliath is such an important organization in this world.
Yeah. Goliath is the multinational corporation to sort of beat all other multinational corporations. It seems that most of the world seems to be employed by the Goliath Corporation. And they have been an ongoing thorn in the side for Thursday right from the very beginning of the book. They're trying to get into the book world because they want to be able to exploit the characters in the book world and sell them all their sort of shabby goods and services. And the only real way they can try and get into the book world is through Thursday. So they've been trying to use her to get into the book world for the last 7 books, and they're still trying. And, of course, Thursday is still trying to stop them.
And Thursday's nemesis, a gentleman who works for the Goliath Corporation, a very high-ranking gentleman, is named Jack.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say his last
name. No, he's got a name that you can't say on radio, but it's one of the lesser words, and it just sort of rhymes with one of them, really, but it just sounds like... It's spelled differently, but it sort of sounds the same.
Mm-hmm.
He's been sort of after Thursday for equally as number of books. One of our resident baddies.
Let's talk about the dark reading matter, because I think that's really a crucial element here.
Yeah. Yeah, the dark reading matter is again, what I like to do when I'm writing books, because I know they're series books, I introduce ideas maybe two books back, and then I sort of mention them again, and then I actually then exploit them in the book. Because the idea, I think, of fantasy is to make fantasy appear normal and unusual. And if I introduce too many bizarre ideas from nowhere, then, of course, it just looks like me working out silly ideas. But once I've mentioned them a couple of books back, then they become sort of familiar, and people go, oh, yeah, I know about that. Yeah. So the dark reading matter is because in the book world, everything in the book world is books that you can find in the real world, but it's a theoretical side of the book world, because what I postulate is that bookologists have estimated that only 10 or 15% of the book world is visible, and most of it is actually unseen books which have either been erased or forgotten, and that's the dark reading matter, and that's what people have been trying to get into for a while, to try and really to exploit it, essentially for the to mine it for metaphor, because there's a metaphor shortage in the book world at the moment, and they think there must be a lot of metaphor in the dark reading matter. So it's been an ongoing plotline for a while, and in this latest book, The Woman Who Died a Lot, they're finding a way in to the dark reading matter, but they're slightly suspicious that someone might already have done it, and it's an ongoing plot device. The next Thursday book will be called Dark Reading Matter, and it'll be all about Thursday's adventures in the dark reading matter.
Oh, lovely. Jasper Ford joins us. We have all these things looming. We have the smiting that everyone is dreading and that's coming up, and we also have HR 6984.
Yeah.
Which is a way in the future, but it's an important element in all this. And then we have what we discover are mind worms, and we don't want to give away too much about this, but this, you really had fun with this one, didn't you?
Yes. This was quite fun. Although, to be honest, most of my books do have at least 5 plot threads running through them. Each one is pretty weird, I must say. I'm not sure why I put this, you know, this asteroid hurtling towards Earth, but it is 37 years into the future, and everyone's kind of not really worried about it, because it's kind of, we're like that as humans, you know, we can sort of deal with very immediate problems, but, you know, problems that are over 10 years ago, 10 years away, we kind of go, it'll be all right. So that is a sort of ongoing sort of, you know, a satirical jab, really. So I just like sort of adding things on, and the mind worm, as you said, this is another strange idea that's been going for 3 or 4 books now, is that Thursday's second daughter, Jenny, doesn't actually exist. She's a delusion that has been foisted on her by another one of her nemesises, or nemesi, or whatever it is, someone called Acheron Hades, Aeonis Hades, who can manipulate memories. So if you imagine that you have this daughter and you have all the memories of her, yet when you go to pick up from her from school, everyone tells you she doesn't exist, and then you have to argue with them that she does until someone comes along and says, no, Thursday, sit down, she doesn't. You can understand just how evil that could be. And that's just one of the plot threads that runs through the book.
And Thursday, unsurprisingly, has this nemesis, this Hades woman, because she's done some things to this woman's siblings.
Yeah, she killed her brother. Yes. in the first book. And we've had Aeonis has appeared several times in the series, and she comes back quite often. I rather like her. Baddies are great fun to write, I must say.
I think one of my favorite scenes takes place when they go to visit this collection of rare books, which is being kept by a group of nuns who worshipped a lobster. This is a very important segment. We don't want to give away too much, but the whole lobster thing and the lobster sculpture, how fun.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Well, the blessed ladies of the lobster have been a sort of ongoing peculiar religious order ever since the beginning of the series. And I always mention them, but I never do anything with them. And I thought, it's just about time we should, you know, see what the blessed ladies of the lobster get up to. So finally we do. Finally we do.
And even though these books tend to be absurd, we are dealing with all these truisms, all these things where the reader goes, you know, I really think this is an important idea, or this really matters. And we get to the end and we hear a statement like, whoever controls the past controls the present. And that really rings true.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, it's it's great fun to write entertaining books and to have some fun. But I think also you have to throw in some seriousness as well. And I think there's a strange alchemy when you're writing books, that it can't be just funny. I think there has to be some seriousness in it, because then it gives a kind of counterpoint to the comedy. And I don't want to get all sort of complicated about it, but I think also books should be thought-provoking, not in a preachy kind of standing on the soapbox kind of way, but I think there's a responsibility for authors to just at least be thought-provoking about something, not necessarily to say what is this and what is that and how you should think or anything, nothing like that. That's horrible. But there should be a little sort of nub of seriousness in there, and I think it just gives the book a little edge, I think, you know.
The book is The Woman Who Died a Lot. It's the seventh in Jasper Ford's Thursday Next series. And the title is related to the fact that you have these wonderful day players. And without giving too much away about this, this is how Thursday's able to keep dying.
Yeah. She's actually died quite a lot. Because there have been some time travel subplots in previous books. I think this is probably about the maybe sixth or seventh time that she's died. I like playing with, you know, playing with conventions, and to have someone die and then come back is actually quite amusing. Yes, in this one, the day players. Well, I kind of like the idea of synthetic humans. You know, ever since, I suppose, watching Blade Runner, you know, we all like the idea of that. But how day players work is that they're kind of budget humans. They don't have anything on them that really that you need more than 24 hours. So they don't need to eat, they don't need to drink. They're just filled with a sort of glucose paste that they run on, and they have a very high functioning brain. They can do all sorts of things, but only for 24 hours. So it's a real budget human, and after 24 hours, then they'll just kind of wither and die, and they're usually sort of euthanized before that. But the thing about them is that they're actually used for as temporary office staff. So you'd keep a whole, you know, down in the basement, there'd all be these Tupperware sarcophaguses or sarcophagi. And when you need someone to do some extra photocopying, you just go, oh, nip down to the basement, go and get a day player, and they know where everything is, they know where everyone's name is, and they just get on with the photocopying. It's brilliant. And it's much better than just getting someone into work for the day.
Oh, you need those copies right now? Well, I guess I'm your sarcophagi. Our guest today is Jasper Ford. His book is The Woman Who Died a Lot. We talked about the day players just now, so I guess we need to talk about the all-time favorite dodos. You have lots of dodos.
Yeah, this was, strangely enough, this was a very odd plot device that appeared in book one. She has a pet. Thursday has a pet dodo called Pickwick. And the thing about Thursday's world, in some ways, it's very advanced in genetics. It's extremely advanced. But in some other ways, like in computer technology and the space science, it's very, very behind us. And Pickwick, who is this dodo, was made from a home cloning kit. That Thursday made herself when home cloning kits were all the rage. So Pickwick is a very old dodo now. I think she's a sort of version 1.2, which was she doesn't have any wings because they didn't get the sequence correct until about version 2.6. But what this managed to really do for me, I mean, Pickwick doesn't do very much apart from being a sort of a pet, and she becomes quite has a sort of important role to play, shall we say, in finding a way into the dark reading matter. But what it allowed me to do was to actually play with the whole notion of a genetic revolution about bringing creatures back from extinction. So we have dodos, we have mammoths, we have saber-toothed tigers, and then I also brought back Neanderthals. And that opened up a whole interesting plot thread that ran through about two books earlier on in the sequence, earlier on in the series, which was really about, you know, if you create a new species of human, you know, is it owned? They were created by the Goliath Corporation. So do the Goliath Corporation own them? And if so, can they do with them what they want? And that was actually a really good subplot that I really enjoyed writing.
I love Stig the Neanderthal.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah. Neanderthals are so hip in this series.
Yeah.
They're so cool. Everybody wants to be like that.
Yeah, I know. They're really nice people.
They are.
They don't understand the personal pronoun. They can't say I. It's always we. Because they don't understand the whole notion of being an individual. They're very much hardwired Marxist, I think, is what someone refers to them as. And that was, of course, the evolutionary edge that they did not have and why they died out, of course. And they're just too nice.
This is such an interesting household. We've got this hermit on the grounds, and we've got Winko, and we've neglected to talk about Thursday's husband. Now, what's your thing with amputations, Jasper?
Well, I don't think I've got many of them, have I?
At least a couple in this book, aren't there?
Are there?
I don't know. What happened to your arm? No, I guess that doesn't count, does it?
She has her arm shot off. Yeah, that's when she's a day player, so it doesn't really count.
Oh, okay.
Landon and Thursday met in the Crimean War, because it was still on 137 years later, in book one. And he was invalided out because he trod on a landmine, so he doesn't actually have a leg. He's the only true sort of, I suppose, amputee in the books. But he's just Landon, her husband, and is her rock, and tremendously supportive. I like him a great deal. He's a really nice guy.
Actually, you have another one at the end of the book, but I'm not going to. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. You've got so many characters. It's hard. I can't believe you can keep track of all these the way you do.
Well, it's juggling, isn't it? It's like keeping all these balls in the air.
Yeah, if you think about it, though, just remember, near the end, there's another one. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. The book is The Woman Who Died a Lot by Jasper Ford, and I assume you're on book tour. You've come over here from...
Yeah.
You still live in Wales, right?
Yeah, I live in Wales. I'm in the U.S. for the whole of October, my tour details of my tour can be found on my website, jasperford.com. I'm just going all over everywhere. I think I've got 22 cities to visit.
Lovely.
And I'm just at the beginning of the tour.
So the book officially came out yesterday, and are you driving a Sportina?
No. Touring in the States can't be done in a car. Now I do rail when I can, but otherwise, I'm on lots of flights.
I think my favorite part of the book is that part that takes place at the convent, or whatever you want to call it, where the Mother Superior comes out. I laughed and laughed for pages there because of her behavior, and readers will just have to get to that and see why it's so funny. But that was just hysterical.
Well, it's kind of unexpected, probably, is why it's...
Well, after a while, you're starting to expect it, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the process for you? Do you just lock yourself up somewhere and just think and fantasize? I mean, how do you do it?
Pretty much. I mean, when I'm writing, I mean, one of the tricks to be able to keep all these balls in the air is you've got to keep your eye on them. And I think what I do is I try and write my books as immersively as possible. I will say, right, 6 months, and I'm going to work every single day, 6 days a week. And that's what I do. And then once you start working like that, and after 2 or 3 weeks, you really start getting into the swing of the whole book, and you can almost see all these plot threads. And I work through the book, and I know I know what happens now. And then you get a good idea about where things should be, and we go from one subplot to the other. The trick is just to do it very, very intensely, so it all stays in my head. If I were to work 1 or 2 days a week, then of course all the detail would fall out, and I'd spend those 2 days a week, getting back up to speed again. So it's very important to get up a good head of steam, as they say, and just go plowing through.
Do you have like a big board on the wall to kind of keep it all straight?
No, not really, because that actually keeps me from writing. Then because then it slows everything down. And I think the thing is that you've got to keep the speed up. And it's my just get straight in on the keyboard and just start bashing away and just try and keep it all in your head at one go.
Okay, we talked about her daughter Tuesday. We talked about her husband. We neglected to talk about her son Friday. He's another teenager that has some issues because he had a wonderful future ahead of him.
Yeah, so he used to, there's a sort of thread of time travel that runs through the books as well. And a couple of books ago, I decided to get rid of this time travel. So the whole technology of time travel was deemed not possible, and they had to shut down all the time engines, and now there's no more time travel. But what that means, of course, is that for Friday, who was going to have a glittering career in the time industry, he no longer has that career. And it's really about him coming to terms with the fact that instead of being a hero a highly decorated hero and running to, you know, one of the top spots in the Crown Guard, he now actually murders Gavin Watkins in 4 days' time and spends the rest of his life in prison. And it's really about whether he can accept his destiny or whether he can try and change it. But he doesn't know who Gavin Watkins is and has no idea why he's going to shoot him in 4 days' time. So there's this sort of little mystery there as well.
I am particularly fond of librarians, and I see that you've dedicated this book to librarians, and I'm guessing that this is going to be a very popular book with librarians.
Well, the series has been very popular with librarians, and we've had an awful lot of support from librarians who talk to one another a lot. And because the books are about the classics, they're about books, they're about stories, the librarians, in the US and the UK have always been very supportive of the book. So I thought, well, I think we're going to have a bit more about librarians in this book, and what's more, I'm going to dedicate it to librarians because they do a great job, and they're an endangered species, and they're having to do a very difficult job with very limited resources. So they need our support now more than ever.
Well, there was no irony there when Thursday's informed that her funding for her library has been cut 100%.
Yeah. Well,
there's no irony there.
No, at all. But I kind of like the idea of, because the library budget meeting actually becomes a pivotal scene in the book, and I thought, that's what I should do. I think, librarian financial meetings, budgetary meetings, you know, I don't think that's ever been a pivotal point in any book before. And I thought librarians would really enjoy that, or anyone who's been in a budget meeting.
Well, Jasper, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program again.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been fun.
The book is The Woman Who Died a Lot. Jasper Ford wrote it. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Julie Clam is one of the funniest writers I know. She's got a new book. It's called Friend Keeping, A Field Guide to the People You Love, Hate, and Can't Live Without. Julie Clam treasures her friends, and she treasures her friendships. Tune in next week for The Book Nook and Friend Keeping. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.